What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Future-proof extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland
on News Talk.
If you're in Dublin today and you walk from Balls Bridge to, say, East Wall, which is about a distance of 3 or 4 kilometres, take you half an hour maybe, I dare say you'll find that the way people talk changes massively from the start to the end of your journey. We all have accents, but what is it that causes these differences and how does it affect our behaviour and personalities? Well, Rob Drummond is Professor of Sociolinguistics at Manchester Metropolitan University. He joins me now. Welcome to the programme, Rob.
Thank you very much.
First off, I know this because I studied a bit of it in university, but what is sociolinguistics for our listeners, please, and what does it involve?
So sociolinguistics is the study of language, but especially how it interacts with society and culture. So there are some areas of linguistics, which is the kind of the scientific study of language. There are some areas which deal with language in a very abstract way. But within sociolinguistics, we're really interested in how language is actually used by people in everyday situations. And we're especially interested in things like accents and dialects and how that relates to who we are.
Can you give me sort of things that you might study in particular, like reference a few sort of areas?
Yeah, so we look at language variation. So we're looking at how language varies between groups of speakers, how this group of people might use language, the same language, in a different way to this group. We're interested in language variation between individuals. This person, even though they're from the same town, this person might speak differently from this person. Mm. And we're interested in how language varies within the individual. So how we often speak differently depending on the situation we're in. Mm. And of course, all of these things kind of link to our sense of who we are. So we might kind of, you know, we'll make recordings of people and really analyze them quite carefully and try and link that to aspects of someone's identity and social factors such as age and social class and gender and sexuality and all kinds of things.
Are you talking about the words that they choose as well as their tone and the way they speak, their accents and so on?
I think word choice is definitely one thing. So we can kind of split this up into the difference between dialect and accent. And people use the terms interchangeably sometimes, but strictly speaking, dialect is the bigger term. And dialect includes the words and the grammar and the pronunciation that
right.
people use in language, whereas accent is only pronunciation. It's just how you say things. So they're all interesting. You know, there's language varies at the level of grammar and words, of course, as well. Word choice can single someone out as being from this area or from this area or from this social background. So, yeah, we do a lot of that. But I guess most work is done on accent only because there's so much variation. There's like literally every time you pronounce, you know, a certain sound, you're giving away something. There's something to do with your identity there.
And I suppose you're doing that outside of the performative world, right? I mean, I have I wouldn't say a persona. I'm mostly myself on the radio, but my real life is a lot more sweary. Like another famous retired broadcaster who, if you know, you know, that's a professional self and there's a private self, right? In this case, you're not really talking about that. You're talking about how people are naturally in their environments as opposed to actors and so on.
Well, we're talking about both, actually, because that's an interesting distinction. Because, yeah, traditionally, a lot of the research has been on that, people in their natural environment and doing everything they can. Researchers doing everything they can to kind of access people's speech in natural environments. But just as interesting to me is the performative side of it, is how do we, what changes when we create this different version of ourselves, when we have our kind of broadcast identity or our family identity or our friend identity or our teacher identity, what is it that changes to make those things happen? That's just as fascinating, to be honest.
So you started your work proper in this with your PhD project, in which you were working with Polish people who had come to Manchester and were learning English. And I thought this was really fascinating because some of those people that you met retained their Polish identity very well, and others integrated so much in their learning of the language that they started to take on Manchester accents. Why was that of interest to you?
Yeah, that was great. That came about purely because I was working as an English teacher at the University of Manchester at the time, just down the road from where I am now, and I was working as an English teacher teaching people from all different parts of the world, teaching them to use English to then go on to their academic study. And I just noticed that some of my students were acquiring English, but with a Manchester accent, a noticeable Manchester accent, and some of them weren't.
To be clear, they both had similar-ish levels of English, but one was with an accent, one was without.
Exactly that. So same class, same group of people, just from different parts of the world. And then I kind of thought, well, this is interesting. And I thought this would be good. And at the time I was looking to do a PhD, and I thought this is it. And so I narrowed it down to Polish people just to keep that kind of controlled. And there were lots of Polish people around at the time. And so then I sort of went out meeting Polish people and recording them and talking to them and asking about their attitudes towards, towards the UK and what their plans were and this kind of thing. And I realized that what was happening was, regardless of their level of English, there was a strong pattern for if people had come to the UK intending to stay, intending to settle down, they were much more likely to have a Manchester accent in their English. Whereas if they had said to me, I'm coming, I'm just here for, I just want to stay for 2 or 3 years, I want to work, get some money and go home. Those were the ones, even if their English was really good, those were the ones that kind of retained this Polish, specific Polish pronunciations. And my interpretation of all of that was that they were maintaining that bit of their identity. They were using that as a way of saying, look, I'm enjoying it here. I'm part of this community, but really, I'm Polish. I want to be back home in Poland. And wow. And that pattern kind of stayed quite robustly through the research, to be honest.
Okay, I mean, obviously we're hypothesizing a little bit there in terms of why it's happening, but I suppose, you presumably looked at whether or not this is a subconscious or a conscious thing. I mean, this is not something they chose to do, presumably?
Well, it's very hard. When we're talking about language, it's very hard to make that distinction. And I think there's often a level of awareness that's sort of in between the two. So you can kind of, if you think about the way you speak yourself, you're aware of yourself doing certain things, but it's not as if you're consciously controlling it. So I wonder if this kind of thing lives within that space in between. It's not, people aren't completely unaware of it. They're not completely unconscious to it. They're not doing it completely deliberately, saying, right, I think when I pronounce this, I've got to sound this way. But there's something in between. And I think that's a really interesting area for identity work. I think when we, it ties in with all the other areas of behavior, I think, speech. If we think about when we're creating a particular version of ourselves, we dress in a certain way, we walk in a certain way, we enter a room in a certain way, we behave in a certain way, and we speak in a certain way. And some of these are very conscious choices, and some of these are less conscious choices, but taken together, they all help to create this sense of who we are, I think.
Can I confess something to you that I don't think I've confessed out loud to anybody, Rob? My accent changes a little bit depending on the people I'm around, and I'm aware of it and I don't stop it. So there must be a small part of it that is consciously allowing this to happen. For example, I play football with some young lads, and when I play with them, my accent sort of hardens a little bit. I know, I have this soft SH at the end of T's that all goes. I don't always pronounce the last letter of the word. And afterwards I'm like, why is that happening? But I'm wondering, is that very uncommon? Am I plonker for doing that?
No,
I mean,
that's
not something
great.
I do, but does it happen a lot?
Yeah, that's great. That I would love to study that. That's just a perfect example.
You never get anyone to admit it, though.
That's it. Yeah, but we wouldn't have to, you see. So the way we do it is we'd, you know, we'd get somebody like you, and we'd persuade you to kind of be mic'd up in various situations and just go about your daily business. And in time, you'd kind of forget. It would become, you'd be so used to it, you'd forget what was going on. And remember, we're talking about tiny changes. The way we analyze this is really, it's not obvious. It's not like somebody suddenly saying, you know, using this particular word or this, or swearing and not swearing. Often it's quite subtle, and you've noticed yourself doing it. Mm. And I think other people, it wouldn't be that they noticed that particular feature. They'd just get a sense of, hold on, this guy sounds a bit, you know, like this or a bit like that. They wouldn't, people, unless you're kind of studying language or really paying attention, you don't really hear it at that level. You tend to hear it. It's just building a picture of somebody.
Yeah.
And that's great. Yeah, you'd come across as just kind of asserting your authority a little bit and just acting like a little bit
tougher, more macho.
But in a subtle way.
A little bit more macho. Can I ask, when something like that happens, it does that say anything about the sort of personality that it's someone has? I mean, are you necessarily more deferential or more empathetic or more fluid, or is there any link to like fluid accents and the sort of person you are? Am I weak because I do this?
No, I think it's quite the opposite. And people often ask me this. People often say, you know, I'm aware of my accent changing depending on who I'm speaking to. And to me, that's a signal of a good communicator. That's somebody who is, like you say, quite empathetic and aware of the other person. I think it's very unusual for people who to not change the way they speak at all. And if you think about the type of people that is, you know, there are certain UK politicians who I think would never dream of changing the way they speak, but of course they already have these kind of voices of authority. They've never felt the need to have to adjust. They don't feel the need to fit in with anyone or anything like this. So I think when people do adjust the way they speak, I think it's a good thing.
I have to say that you're on my radio program. I want to move on a bit because I am interested in accents themselves and where they come from, because when you think about it, we're all living together in quite a close proximity in cities. And yet, as I mentioned at the beginning, like, you know, you could walk across 2 kilometers in a city and have totally different accents. Where do the accents come from? Why do accents exist at all? If we're all speaking the same language, you know, and we all relatively have the same physiology, why do we not all sound the same?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I mean, the thing is, language changes all the time. All spoken language changes. Every language, every natural language does. If it's being used by people, it will change over time. And we know that, we can hear that just in English, that we, you know, we don't use English in the same way that, I don't know, in the 1600s or the 1300s or whatever. You know, we have records of what English was like. We know it changes. But what happens is it changes in different ways for different groups of people. And within the UK and Ireland, there's been so many different groups of people settling there and using different languages. And eventually from that, in certain areas, English emerged as the kind of dominant language. But then lots of different varieties of English, you know, some almost, you know, wouldn't really be understood by other parts. But then it gradually becomes a bit more similar in some ways. But then it maintains its differences because groups, social groups, maintain their differences. Language, you know, people talk about language being a living thing. It isn't. It's in the people. It's when people use it, that's what makes it living. And so it has all of these social kind of aspects. And language, a really important part of language, people kind of forget this. You think of language as for communication. But language is a way of saying, I'm part of this group and I'm not part of that group. I belong to this group. I align with these people and not with those people. And that could be done by using a different language completely, or it can be done by just using a different version of maintaining your own way of speaking. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening now. So in the past, it was simply because there were lots of different varieties of a language would emerge in a place, and there wasn't much communication between different groups, and so those differences maintained. But now, when we have the same access to everything, we hear the same media, we hear all of the same TV, everything, but those differences are still there, and that's because it's our way of maintaining either regional or social or racial, ethnic, gender, sexuality differences. That's what it's doing.
And that happens both within either either end of the socioeconomic spectrum, right? You have people with strong accents, you know, who people who have wealth would, you know, would sort of look down on sometimes and unfairly judge people who have strong accents and make a shortcut and stereotype that person. And at the same time, you have people who from the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum preserving their accent because they don't want to be associated with the poshos because they have social status within their own group. And so it works both ways.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It does. And often you'll find, I mean, when we're talking about regional sort of type accents and dialects, you'll find the stronger ones, the more noticeable ones lower down the social scale, the kind of posher people get, the more they sound the same. That's just a general kind of rule. And then, but then, yeah, that's a really good point about sort of maintaining sort of more working class accents, because that, you know, you could see there's a social argument for, well, if certain ways of speaking open doors for you and are seen as more prestigious, why doesn't everybody learn to speak a certain way? Well, a very good reason for that is the kind of pride in not speaking that way and maintaining those, again, social groupings, regional groupings, whatever, to say, well, I'm not going to change the way I speak because it's a really important part of who I am. It ties me to my region, to my country, to my social group. And so, yeah, I think there's what we call within sociolinguistics, we talk about kind of overt prestige and covert prestige. And you have got the overt prestige of this sort of standard variety of language in a given society. And that's seen as overtly prestigious. But then there's a covert prestige in the non-standard. There's a covert prestige in the ways of speaking that aren't seen as openly kind of prestigious.
So Rob talks about all of this stuff in his book. It's called You're All Talk. And I was interested to hear about this accent van that you drove around Manchester. Can you tell me a little bit about how you measure and how you go about doing the science of this? Because it's fun to have a conversation about languages, but how do you put the framework on science on it to create something valuable in terms of knowledge of what's actually going on in the world of sociolinguistics?
Yeah, that's good. So, well, what we do, say, all sociolinguistics at some point has to involve some language data. You know, for me, that's always recorded data. So we're always interested in recordings. And recently, you know, this project we did called Manchester Voices, looking at accents and dialects and identities in Greater Manchester. The way we did that, we thought it would be better if we went out into the community and kind of got people involved. And we kitted out this accent van, which was a beautiful kind of sleek black van, which we drove around Greater Manchester, and we invited people kind of on board, and they were we weren't in there with them, but they were faced with a camera and a voice recorder, and they were asked some questions, and about, you know, the way they speak and what it means to them and whatever. And the way we analyze these kind of things is we do it in two ways. We're interested in what people say, you know, people's attitudes. So that's one part of it. And that's how we gather all that information about people's feelings towards, you know, regional pride and that kind of thing. But we measure the speech. We analyze the actual speech, and we do this in different ways. Sometimes we just use a kind of auditory analysis where we just literally listen out, painstakingly go through the recordings and listen for particular sounds and how they're pronounced, whether it's this way or this way. And that can work for a lot of consonant sounds. But when it comes to vowel sounds, which is where a lot of accent resides, we measure sound frequencies. So we spend a lot of time analyzing the sound frequencies, and using this and using some kind of clever software, we're able to map particular differences, and we can sort of visualize this, and you can start to visualize things that you can only just hear. So you know, sometimes it's quite hard to distinguish between particular sounds and particular pronunciations of the same sound, but using this we can measure it in such a way that we can start to track how things are changing. So we can almost see changes, you know, before they're auditorily, you know, noticeable. We can see that these things are happening. And these might be changes over time where we can track by looking at older speakers versus younger speakers in the same area. That's a kind of a bit of a proxy for seeing how language is changing. So we do all of this, and then we can create some kind of fantastic visual resources to help understand this. So on the one hand, we're doing all the kind of pretty, it's kind of social science, but it's pretty intense social science on the one hand. But on the other hand, for a project like that, we're making sure that all of our results are available for everyday people to be able to access and see. So we have, you know, we have exhibitions and we have installations and we have online resources. So that for me, the important thing is if people are giving up their time by taking part, then they need to be able to understand what you're doing with that. If they're giving us their voice, they need to understand what we're doing with that voice. Yeah. And so we try and make everything accessible to them. But in the background, from the kind of academic side of things, we're sort of moving the discipline forward, you know, like all kind of good social scientists do, by just increasing a bit of understanding here and there and trying out new ways of doing things.
Well, as I say, if you're interested in how you talk and how you ended up talking like that, and you might be interested in Rob Drummond's book. It's called You're All Talk. Rob, thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland
on News Talk.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.